The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I mean, I don't like Tokyo Drift, but I can see why people would like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you like to drift.
Yes.
Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
But there's a body in the window seat!
Yes, dear. We know.
You know?
Of course. Yes, but it has nothing to do with Teddy.
Hey, hello, everybody.
Hey, howdy.
Yeah, this is Wreckatopia, episode 19.
That's one of my favorite songs. 19. I'm just kidding.
Yep. And I'm Chris Atkinson.
And I'm Jeremy Scott.
Mm-hmm. And today's big recommend is Arsenic and Old Lace. I think it's our first classic that has been recommended, unless we think the movies from the 90s are classics or whatever, but I don't know.
Well, that could be a whole podcast discussion unto itself.
But anyway, how's everybody out there in the chat doing? We got some of our usual crew here. And someone slab is like, oh my God, it's the guys from the videos. Yeah, absolutely. It's us. It's us. It's the people. It's the people. Before we get into the big recommends, you get any small recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Yes, yes. In unprecedented fashion, I'm going off book.
Off book.
And my first small recommend is, I'm going to give it 1 2/3 thumbs up.
1 2/3. Oh, that's painful.
It's the recent Sandra Bullock, The Lost City.
Ah.
Channing Tatum and Brad Pitt and Daniel Radcliffe.
Ooh.
I didn't give it 2 full thumbs up because it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you can have a really good time with it. And it has some really good moments. It's not at all as much like Romancing the Stone as I expected. Have you seen this?
I have not.
Okay. So Sandra Bullock is this former legitimate, like, archaeologist writer whose writings never went anywhere and she never found the thing she was looking for. She wrote a romance novel just to pay the bills and it took off. Now she's a hugely successful, popular romance novelist who hates the fact that she's a romance novelist because she really is an archaeologist. Channing Tatum is the cover model who is dumb and not smart enough for her, and Brad Pitt is like this James Bondian rescue person. The biggest surprise for me was Daniel Radcliffe. He's having a blast playing the bad guy who basically kidnaps Sandra Bullock's character. There's a part where Brad Pitt's trying to rescue them from Radcliffe's bad guy camp. And he set explosives on all these cars, and he's running. You've seen in the trailer where they're slow-mo running, and all the explosions are happening behind them. Then it cuts to Daniel Radcliffe walking up, and he goes, "Why are things exploding?" And he's just having so much fun. My wife and I both enjoyed this and laughed a lot more than we expected. I might not recommend it if it was in theaters and you had to pay full price for it, but something that you can stream or rent, I think, you guys, most of you will have a pretty good time here. I certainly did. That's my first small recommend.
I think it's great that Daniel Radcliffe, he could have taken some sort of route with his acting career where we would have always just been like, well, there's Harry Potter. He's Harry trying to be something else and whatever. But he instantly started taking all these weird out there roles, and I think he's probably quietly got like 50 or 60 credits at this point, because he's in a lot of things.
One of the very first things he did was do that stage play in London where he went full nude.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, he's trying to make sure we see the range. Mm-hmm. We see it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny that I think from what I understand, his parents weren't terrible. So he got to keep a lot of the money that he earned on Harry Potter.
And so
he's able to just do whatever he wants. It doesn't matter. Like, he can take all the risks that he wants. So it's pretty awesome.
Yep.
I recently got the Blu-ray for The Northman.
Ooh.
It's a movie that I had been wanting to see in theaters, but just never got around to it, and it finally came out. Eggers is one of those directors that's I have had kind of a like off and on, like, I kind of like what this guy's doing, but I don't know if I like the movies that I'm watching, you know, one of those type of things. So, because he did The Witch, and he did The Lighthouse, and he's doing another The Thing here. This one's probably his most accessible movie. It has an actual, like, you know, there's not a lot of like super weirdness, although there is some super weirdness in it. But Alexander Skarsgård plays a guy who, when he was a kid, his uncle killed his father, took over the throne. He runs away. They think he's dead. He goes off to, I guess, from what I think the movie is saying, is old Russia, not called Russia yet.
I see.
And he trains with another group of people who don't like these Northmen, these Vikings, I guess is what they're trying to say they are, or whatever. I don't know if that's what they're saying, but there's a lot of Viking names and words and stuff in this, but he trains with them, and they go to attack. This is many years later. They go to attack, and he hears through the grapevine that his uncle no longer in power in that place anymore, got taken over immediately by some other faction, and basically he killed his dad for no reason. And so now he has to find where this guy is, and he learns that he's a shepherd somewhere, a wealthy shepherd somewhere in, like, I don't know what country it is, but he poses as a slave to get to this place, comes in and starts to planning his revenge and everything. Nicole Kidman plays his mom, and you have Anya Taylor-Joy as another woman looking for some sort of like revenge or some sort of place in this world, or whatever. Of course, they become romantically entangled during this and everything. But I really liked it. It's just one of those very visceral movies. Eggers likes to keep the camera on things. It's not a lot of quick cutting and all that. If you're into that Ari Aster, Eggers, the guy who did Green Knight, if you're into those guys' aesthetic, you know, this is kind of in that same mold. I feel like a lot of these movies that these guys have made in like 20 years, we might be looking back at them as like the new Scorsese or the new whatever, because this is the new way of storytelling. Now, it could completely not translate at all, and I'm just, you know, totally wrong. But I think this is something that I think this is ahead of its time, kind of.
I'm interested in this one. I watched The Lighthouse a few weeks ago, mostly because there was nothing else on that I hadn't seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an experience. But The Green Knight is the outlier for me, and that one I really, really dig.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas most of the other ones in these guys' pool have not quite vibed well with me, but the trailer for The Northman was outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it promised more action than the film actually has, because I think that might be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't, yeah, there's not like a lot of action in this. It's a lot of like, you know, it's like, you know, it's a kind of a testosterone movie. It thought of it as Braveheart in Vikings times, basically is kind of what this is. Although maybe less action than Braveheart, because Braveheart's a lot of battle scenes and stuff like that. This one is more, he feels like he needs to like, is it more a little bit more cerebral, but there is a lot of like there. I will warn you, there's a lot of like pretty grotesque violence. Although it's shot in a way that it's not like oh so sick, but there are some where you're like you're gonna go oh that kind of thing. So
awesome. Mm-hmm. All right, going off book for my second small recommend. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not gonna go off. I'm gonna recommend a television show that I've only seen a few episodes of.
Okay. Well,
my wife has watched all 7 seasons, and it's Grace and Frankie.
Okay. I've seen
this a show on Netflix.
Cover somewhere from, yeah.
Yeah, basically, if you just look at it from the outside, it probably looks like a sitcom for boomers,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than that. The premise is Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, two of our best performers of all time, play people that their entire lives have hated each other. But just recently, their husbands, Martin Sheen and Sam Waterston, have decided they're gay.
Okay.
And they want to be with each other.
Okay.
And that causes Grace and Frankie to end up as initially unwelcome friends. They're in the same predicament. They have to turn to each other. And that's sort of the base premise. But man, that's such a great cast. And they're all at the top of their game. Every time I walked in over the last several weeks while my wife was binging this show, I would have a genuine laugh. Sometimes I would sit and watch an episode with her. The supporting cast is great. Ethan Embry's in this. And it's just really well written. Really well performed. It does get into some very special episodes and drama stuff, and of course all 4 of those actors' leads can handle that stuff without a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel sitcom-y, even though it is. I don't know, I can't articulate the reasons, whether it's the way they shot the thing or just the way it's delivered, but a lot of sitcoms that I've seen, like Big Bang Theory or The Two Broke Girls, it always feels very walk to your mark. Make this expression, deliver the line.
Yeah.
And this show doesn't feel like that. And I don't think we're alone. It's 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8.2 on IMDb. Mm. And like I said, 7 seasons. They wrapped up on their own terms. They did not get canceled. And I think it's really solid. And if you're looking for a new sitcom to binge or have on in the background, lighten the mood because mm-hmm. of all the shitty news in the world.
Sure.
Grace and Frankie on Netflix.
Nice. My second small recommend is going to be, I think it was like a week or so ago, Bo Burnham on his YouTube channel, released an hour long, outtakes of Inside, which was our, because of the arcane way we do voting on this show, our best movie of, 2021. Not to despair, you know, not to, say that this isn't good or anything like that, but
no.
Yeah, he put in this, hour long outtakes thing on his YouTube channel, and it's, I think this is fascinating, especially if you've seen Inside, and I still recommend this movie to you, Jeremy, if you haven't seen it. The process that he's going through during all of this. If you don't know the story of it, is that he, during the pandemic, he wanted to make a special and it went longer than he thought. It went from like somewhere in 2020 to all the way into 2021, that he was trying to come up with content for this thing. In the outtakes, you can see him just experimenting with things, like trying to see what this does and what this does, and like sitting around just trying to come up with ideas and everything. And it's I think this is as important to watch if you like Inside as the movie itself, because it kind of just tells you what kind of state of mind he's in. A lot of times people go, well, how do people come up with this stuff? Or how do they do that? And whatever. A lot of times it's so much failure. And so much, and this isn't to say that the stuff that he has in the outtakes isn't entertaining or anything. That a lot of it is ridiculously entertaining. It's just that there are times where you don't know what, as a creative person, you don't know what you're going to do. You don't have any idea what's going.
Right.
And there's days he's just obviously just like, he's like sullen and like, I don't know what to do. And then you just see him like trying things and whatever. And it's a lot of stuff here ended up would have been fine in the actual special itself. One that got circulated pretty well was the one where he's basically doing Joe Rogan's podcast, and that was really funny.
Oh, I actually saw this one.
Yeah, which is really, really funny. But he has a lot of others. He did some fun things with like the camera and like repeated footage and things like that, where you know you put the camera on something and then that footage shows the other footage inside and then the other footage inside and then the other footage inside. He did something with that in the main special, but you can see him like trying all sorts of different kinds of that particular idea in these outtakes. So what a gift he just gave everybody who liked Inside. To put that on his YouTube channel, and it's an hour long. So, it's continuing, you know, your enjoyment that you had with that. So anyway, highly recommend his outtakes from that.
Awesome. Movie. That Joe Rogan thing was really funny.
It's really good.
But yeah, I think I do need to watch this. I do need to bump it further up my list because it seems more and more my thing. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody who's creative, experiments. Hell, our own YouTube story starts with a bunch of failures.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, it's just experimentation until you find something that works. And we had an email exchange when we found the thing we thought would work. We were like, yeah, this is going to be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I definitely need to put this on my list.
Yeah, I think that you've been warned that there is discussion of things that might be your trigger, but
yep.
I say it in good faith that you would not watch this and feel the need to turn it off. It's that kind of compelling type of thing. And this is the type of, I think this is the type of thing that 6 months down the road, if you've watched it one time, you're going to tell me that you've seen it 10 times. You know, that's the way, that's the way I feel about that movie and these outtakes. So anyway, there you go.
All right, I guess it's time now for this week's big recommend.
The big recommend.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Arsenic and Old Lace. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is near and dear to my heart for many, many reasons. My mother exposed it to me, or exposed me to it. Weird phrasing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When I was pretty young, you know, old enough to understand, you know, that it's okay. Like, old enough to understand what was going on in the movie and not be like, oh, murder is cool. but still probably not a teen. I would say maybe 9 or 10 when I first started watching this movie.
Mm-hmm.
We would watch it almost annually. Like, It's a Wonderful Life. And I also was in this play.
Mm.
Arsenic and Old Lace was a stage play before it was a film.
Yep.
I did the play in college. Anyway, there's fascinating trivia here. Cary Grant famously did not like his own performance in this film.
Yeah.
He did not enjoy working with Frank Capra.
Yeah.
even though I think Cary Grant is one of the very best performances in this film.
Yeah.
And this is, like we said last week in prep, a classic slamming door farce. A writer who's famous for hating marriage gets married and decides to come home and tell his two favorite aunts that he's getting married. And in the process, discovers that they have a dead body in the window seat.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the film, he discovers that they've got 11 dead bodies down buried in the basement.
Yeah.
And they have been, what they call a mercy, a kindness. They have been poisoning lonely old men They bring them in, give them dinner, and poison them. And the old men die and have a peaceful look on their face. And then they bury him in the basement. They conveniently have the help of another nephew who believes himself to be Teddy Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes down to dig another lock for the canal for another yellow fever victim. And they've just worked their own murders into his fantasies. And then the other brother, Jonathan, Mortimer's older brother, who's basically, you know, evil incarnate,
yeah,
comes home with his right-hand man, Dr. Einstein. He's an actual murderer. Jonathan has killed 11 people himself and has a 12th body with mm-hmm. him. And when he sees the hole in the basement, he decides, oh, I'm going to put my dead body in here.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this movie is so hilarious is that it's the timing of when people find out and what they find out,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the way it's slowly revealed for some characters, it's just everything is revealed at the exact perfect moment for maximum comedic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I noticed the most watching it for this podcast that I hadn't paid attention to much in previous viewings is all the camera work.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when they quote-unquote turn off the lights, and the old women have gone to bed and people are sneaking out and moving bodies. The shadow and light work is astounding.
It's really good.
This is a comedy, but it's like Academy Award worthy. They actually built this entire house. Capra wanted to shoot every single scene in this one set. They ended up having to compromise and shoot some scenes elsewhere, but they built this house so that they could shoot in every single room and exteriors. But it's a real house. They built and furnished every single room. They shot scenes in the aunt's bedroom that never ended up in the film.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I believe it was the biggest film set ever built. That fascinates.
Yeah.
Because you really do get a sense of space
mm-hmm.
in this movie, particularly that main living room. And it's fairly important for a couple of the suspenseful moments to know where you are in relation to everything that's happening. But I had never paid much attention to the camera work. I had always focused more on the comedy. Some of it's physical, like when he's poking his brother's leg with a fork to see if it has any feeling in it or not. I adore this. I love watching it with what I remember and know from doing the play. I played O'Hara, the cop who wants to be a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Popping in.
Yeah.
And looks up to Mortimer. That was my role. And one of the things I remember most about this play was how much we fucked with each other with that window seat. Because on our set, when you went into the kitchen, you were actually invisible to the audience, but right behind the window.
Mm-hmm.
And the window seat's back was empty, so the dead body could slide in there when it was time to pull him out in that window seat. Because there's so many moments where somebody walks over and opens it to look inside, and sometimes it would be us making faces. Sometimes it would be fake dog crap. Like, we were trying to make people break as much as possible
yeah.
with that freaking window seat. Let's hear what your impressions are on your most recent viewing of Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yeah, this is my third attempt on this movie. I had seen it a long time ago, like I said, in the middle of a whole bunch of classics, probably watching a bunch of Cary Grant back in the day, because Cary Grant was known for this kind of movie, especially in this era, like His Girl Friday and The Awful Truth and all those type of movies. Hmm. So the first impression I had, amazingly enough, is that I really love Priscilla Lane in this movie. Who plays his wife Emily. Or Lane. I just thought she was fantastic, and I don't think I had really recognized how good she is in this. She's playing the straight person in this whole madcap thing, but there's so many things where she's just so positive and cheery and just wants to be with this guy who's probably doesn't deserve her, and just she's very good. And this is like one of her last performances. She went the domestic route after this.
Well, good for her.
But the other thing is that Cary Grant, I was sitting there going, man, he is over the top, but why do I like his over the topness in this? And then I was surprised to find out later that he did not like the performance, like you had mentioned. And I was wondering, like, if there's a control to this over the topness that we don't see when people generally go over the top in their acting. There's just something, it may just be him. It may just be the fact that Cary Grant is likable. Like, if we saw Tom Hanks do this, we'd be fine with it, you know? But if it was some other actor doing the over-the-topness, we'd be like, boy, this, what is this guy? I think he's getting away with this?
No, maybe.
But yeah, I love how the two aunts have absolutely no remorse whatsoever. They think it's a good thing that they're doing this. They think it's they even when the cop is like, I'm going to go down there and check the cellar, they're like, oh, there's bodies buried down there if you want to see them. there's so many things as a comedy appreciator that I like in this. Right off the bat, it tells you that you're going to watch something insane. So it goes and it shows a baseball game. And it shows like a brawl that's so bad that fans get into the field and all that. And like, and then it tells its very subtle joke right after that, where it says, meanwhile, in the United States proper, after just leaving Brooklyn, they show, Cary Grant and Priscilla Lane, getting a marriage license. And then when Cary Grant calls the asylum place and he goes, my brother thinks he's Roosevelt, he's playing the bugle, and it's, you know, it's just, you know, the neighbors are complaining and all that, and he goes, oh no, we already have so many Roosevelts as it is, you know, like there's already a lot of people playing Roosevelt, and he's like, you know, it fruitlessly, this guy's like, we could take a Napoleon if you got a Napoleon. And he's like, you hear him say Bonaparte, it's Bonaparte. You know, like he has to like tell Cary Grant what kind of Napoleon he's talking about. That's the type of thing that just that really gets me into it, is that it's an assured comedy. Like, this is one where they're very confident in what is funny and they go off the deep end in a terrific way. For this new viewing was better than the other two by far. I had found out a lot of stuff too on this one. They were shooting this. This movie came out in 1942, 43, somewhere around there, maybe even 44, because they were about to be finished or close to finished, and then Pearl Harbor happened. About that. The Pearl Harbor happened, and then 5 days later, Frank Capra is enlisting in the Army. Frank Capra did a whole bunch of like films for the United States Army, I believe, after this. But he had to file an extension with them to try to complete this movie. This was a play, yes. It was a play like in 1941. That's when the play first started. And they had they got nearly everybody from that play in this movie except for Boris Karloff, who all throughout this movie, they're saying that the Raymond Massey character, who's playing the other Brewster brother, or the sinister Brewster brother, they keep saying he looks like Boris Karloff all the way through it. But they couldn't get Boris Karloff because the Broadway producers said they couldn't have Boris Karloff. They were afraid that their play wouldn't do well if they didn't have Boris Karloff. And the studio
offered him Humphrey Bogart for the play. Yeah. And I think this is an interesting case study in celebrity and the power of star draw, because the two aunts were in the play. They were allowed to leave to go film.
Yeah.
But they weren't the names that Boris Karloff was. Mm-hmm. But Karloff, I think history looks good on him because he had to give permission for them to use his name in the film and make those jokes. Mm-hmm. And he did. So I think that's pretty big of him, but it's fascinating to me that the play was going on while the filming was going on. This would be like if they made a movie of Hamilton in the first year of Hamilton's run, mm-hmm. and everybody except Lin-Manuel was allowed to go film it.
Right.
It's just a fascinating situation how it all came to be.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of like interesting ins and outs of this whole thing. I think it ended up not being able to get any Oscar consideration because of how long it had been delayed. It had been shot in 41 and 42. And I think the only showing in 1942 was Frank Capra showing it to U.S. Army members back in the day.
There was a thing in the IMDb trivia that said when Capra was in Europe before the film had released, he heard soldiers doing the charge joke and realized they had seen the movie and made some inquiries and found out that one of the producers had showed it to some army and soldier people. And what a strange life it had working its way to the eventual screen.
Mm-hmm.
But the content is so good. I think it was going to be a classic, even if it delayed 10 years before it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I love how over the top Cary Grant is because of how not over the top almost every other character
mm-hmm.
is. I think the Dr. Einstein character is a little over the top. And he's clearly doing, I don't know the name of the person he's kind of doing an imitation of.
He's Peter Lorre. He's doing... It's him. He's basically that guy. Yeah.
Okay. There are a few moments where I love when he finds out the ants have killed 12 people because he's like, it's great, Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
You've been chased all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
They stay right here in Brooklyn. They have as many as you. and then they argue over one guy in South Bend, whether he counts as a kill because he died of pneumonia, but he wouldn't have died of pneumonia if I hadn't shot him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, especially Jonathan and the two little old ladies, are not over the top. And so you sort of need, I think, that balance of somebody who is like the audience going, no, this is not normal. This is not normal. This is...
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there's so much comedy, but I do think, for me, it's Cary Grant's facial expressions
that
make this movie.
He goes through like three or four in one shot sometimes, just kind of like, the timing in which he reacts to things is really funny. There are moments in here where they really went for it that I enjoyed, where once the big brawl happens with the cops and his brother and like, you know, the doctor and everything, and that's just happening off screen behind the camera, quote unquote, and he's on the stairs and he's like, he's just like, no, don't bother me right now. Don't bother me. Like as if there's someone coming up to talk to him. There's nobody there talking to him, but he's just like, no, not right now. Not right now. Not right now. Yeah. Oh no, yeah, no, I'm like, good. I'm good.
His wife tells him off and storms out, but he's trying to make a call and he's like, yes, thank you, dude. Thank
mm-hmm.
you. He's like, what's wrong with her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's magic. It's one of those cases where everything just came together. I mean, I think it would have been magic if Karloff had been allowed to play the role.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm glad, even though Cary Grant ultimately didn't love it, I'm glad he did this movie and not like Jimmy Stewart, mm-hmm. as he suggested, might have been better for the role. And I think Jimmy Stewart would have been great.
Mm-hmm.
But to see this side of Cary Grant have that on his resume, I think is awesome,
mm-hmm.
because it shows. I mean, he's Jim Carrey like in some of these.
Yeah, I was about to say that this is the precursor to what we would see with Jim Carrey later on, and you know, I guess there is a tendency to look down on this for some reason, like it's not some kind of skill to be able to do an over the top acting performance, but it clearly has its place. We can't look down on that type of thing, because there's a skill to it. You see the stuff that Jim Carrey did in the 90s, like even when the movie was bad, what does it take to get into that kind of mindset for some of the things that he does in that, So you have to appreciate it a lot of times, even if the movie itself may not be good, or it may not be, maybe even the thing that's he's doing isn't working. At least you gotta say he's doing something that other people can't.
I wrote down one note that is inconsequential, but I still wanted to mm-hmm. share. Because early on in the movie, they're trying to show how much these ladies are loved by everyone in the neighborhood. And it cuts to them in the kitchen with the half door open and all the neighbor kids there with their hands out. And they hand out 2 pumpkins and a whole pie to, like, hands that are there outside. They had a whole pie to this one kid. And what's he going to do? Is he going to cut it? Mm-hmm. Share it? Does he have silverware? No. So I just think if we were sending that movie, that was something that I would probably point out, record scratch, put an arrow on that, mm-hmm. and go, what the hell are they doing handing out a whole pie?
By the way, we had this may have been what you were thinking of with the Peter Lorre performance, Obina in the chat. Thinks maybe it seems like Igor.
Yes.
You know. But
yes,
but that is, if you see any of the Peter Lorre performances, especially like Casablanca or anything like that, that's how he sounds the whole time. He sounds like that. So, anyway, yeah, this is a great movie. I'm glad that you suggested watching this. I went back over memory lane with this one. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm glad. It looks like a lot of the commenters loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully listeners enjoyed your Arsenic and Old Lace viewing. I, for one, can't wait to find out what the surprise super secret double feature is.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
As usual, I ran the gamut. It's very, very seldom that I don't think of lots of movies to go with one of these things. The first one that I thought of was The Last Supper. The Last Supper is all about poisoned wine. It's a dark comedy, but it's not nearly like this. The Last Supper is like pitch black comedy. But it definitely has its place alongside this, but I couldn't imagine watching these back to back. You'd have to watch The Last Supper first probably, and then go to Arsenic and Only. The other one that I thought of was Rope, which is another one where a body is, put into a box of some sort. And, the two killers in the movie, get a sick, thrill from having a dinner party while this body is in the box next to all these partygoers and everything. So Rope would be an excellent one, but I decided to continue it on with the farce, side of this and, teamed it with The Birdcage.
Ooh.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I love The Birdcage.
Mm-hmm. The Birdcage is great. It's obviously very super farcical, but so Calista Flockhart, before she was an Ally McBeal famous, this is also a new marriage or like an engagement or whatever, and they have that engagement party, and they're trying to keep from Gene Hackman, who's this big politician. They're trying to keep from him that her dad is gay, and you have Robin Williams and Nathan Lane playing this gay couple. And I haven't seen this movie in forever, but I just remember this is the type of movie that Arsenic and Old Lace is. And of course Hank Azaria steals a lot of this movie. But Gene Hackman, you never really give him credit for being a good comic actor. He never really did a lot of comedy, but he's great in this as a comic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he had that one little cameo in Young Frankenstein. I wish he had done more comedies in his day, that's a great cast and a great I think it goes along with the madcapness of Arsenic.
It does, because the comedy builds and to the point where I am personally losing it near the end.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Lane, I mean, Hank Azaria steals the movie, but Nathan Lane anchors mm-hmm. that movie.
Yeah.
And again, talk about somebody who's going over the top in the right way at the right time. And then that final scene of them all in drag dancing through the club to get away from the paparazzi gets me every time.
It's fantastic.
That's a remake. I've never seen the French original, La Cage aux Folles.
Yeah.
How's my French? I should watch the original.
I hear it's great too.
French movies are usually great. Mm-hmm. So that's a great pick. I did not see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen The Birdcage close to a dozen times.
Mm-hmm.
It's near and dear. And Robin Williams does a lot of Robin Williams. There's great stories of some of the lines in this that he just improv.
Oh, yeah.
because he can't help himself.
That whole thing where he's like, Marsha Graham, Marsha Graham, Marsha Graham, and Madonna, 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 you know, all that type of stuff is...
Fussy, fussy.
Yeah, yeah. And you hold it all inside. but...
beautiful.
So next week... Oh, actually, it's going to be... 3 weeks, I think, because we're gonna have 2 weeks off here. I'm going to Vegas, baby. So there's gonna be after this podcast, there's gonna be 2 weeks of no podcast, and then there'll be a new podcast after that.
You got plenty of time to watch this.
You got plenty of time. You can watch this one on HBO Max if you have HBO Max, and then you can rent it on Amazon if you have to rent it on Amazon. But I don't know about this one for you, Jeremy. I don't know. I don't know if you're going to like it. You may be a Warnocopia on this one. You may be a Warn.
All right.
1984's Zucker Abrams Zucker movie, Top Secret.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen this?
I have seen this, but not since an age where I could properly appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it when I was probably 19 or 20 years old, didn't give it much attention. Very excited to go back. This is the people who made Airplane,
yep.
right?
Same people made Airplane.
Yeah.
Same made Naked Gun and Police Squad just before this. So I don't know how madcap and crazy you like your comedy a lot of times. This is one of these type of things where... sometimes people watch a movie like Top Secret and they say that is too dumb to be funny. There are other people like me who look at a lot of the different kinds of gags that they have in the movie. There are the way Zucker used to do stuff back in the day and why it was so far superior to all the other spoof movies that came out later on is that they actually would make film choices in their comedy a lot of times. Stuff that you're like, oh, that's a you know, a trope that we see in movies all the time. And then they would do something, they'd spin it. It's weird though. Val Kilmer plays Elvis basically in this, and it's a World War II movie. It's about the French Resistance. All of that is in there. It's really strange, but I think even if you may not like the movie, you're going to come out of this remembering at least 10 gags that you liked.
Okay. All right.
So anyway,
I think you got a good shot here because I like the Naked Gun. I like the Naked Gun sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Airplane. Mm-hmm. So
this is the forgotten
one. Your odds are good.
This is basically the forgotten one of their movies. Like, I don't think this was a tremendous hit. And Val Kilmer back in the day used to do some really crazy comedies like this and Real Genius and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like I think this movie may have been the one that set him off onto, I'm just going to do serious movies from now on. Cause that documentary Val, he talks about, he's talking about his diary and he was like, I'm doing this movie called Top Secret. It has a plot that I have a very hard time telling my friends about or something like that. And I'm like, oh, so you did this movie all in the good fun that it is. And then you just didn't know how to describe it afterwards. It's disappointing. But anyway, Top Secret, in a couple of weeks.
All right. Top Secret. I'm excited about that one. Mm-hmm. I might watch it tonight. No, that'd be too soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should move into some questions.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I'm listening.
First question. What movie or show do you want to have the other person watch from their list of shame most? either because the movie fits them so well or because you're wanting to talk about it badly.
I'm pretty sure you still haven't seen The Lives of Others. So
I have not.
So I am going to re-up that one today. This one I highly considered making a big recommend movie for the next one. I ended up on Top Secret. But I've already small recommended this movie. But The Lives of Others is really great. It's one of those movies by the end of it that I think you will want to talk about it. So yeah, that's the one that I really want you to see.
Righteous. Mm-hmm. Righteous. I wrote down that I'm not actually sure if Chris has seen this yet.
I haven't.
Not, but HBO Max's series Station 11.
Mm-hmm.
With Mackenzie Davis as basically your lead. It's just, this is both because I think you will enjoy it
mm-hmm.
and because I need more people to talk to mm-hmm. about it. I think Dicer's the only person I know that has seen this show that I communicate with regularly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just got so much depth and it's so expert. It's like The Prestige in how it's plotted and paced. So shit that you see in episode one hits completely different when you see it again in episode five, hits completely different when there's a big reveal in episode eight. I mean, it's just, I don't understand the brain of the people that can put something like this together.
Mm-hmm.
And it is based on a novel. Maybe, I think it's based on a novel. There's
so.
A graphic novel within the story. But just really, really good. I think I've recommended it before, at least casually. So I will bump that up
on
your list. Even though you asked me to watch 2 hours and I asked you to watch like 10.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not fair. All right. Let's see. Moving on. What is a movie or TV crossover that you would pay to see? Example, I have always wanted to see a Herbie the Love Bug, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang crossover movie. Honest to God, I thought that already existed. I'm not lying. That just makes so much sense. I don't know why that doesn't already exist. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Mm. I hate that movie.
Mm.
What do you think, Chris?
Because the stories are so similar and they could possibly interweave considering the subject matter, Breaking Bad and Ozark would have a great crossover. Mm. Obviously you would have, because Breaking Bad's, well, Ozark has completed just, I haven't seen that last half that they came out with yet. I watched the first half. I hate how they do this now. Everybody's got to do this one half of a final season and then we do the other half afterwards. I hate this. Especially because once I was into that final season of Ozark, that first half, I was like, I'm ready to watch them now. And now that 2 months have gone by, I'm like, fuck it. I'm just going to wait for, you know, I don't need to watch it now. But the two stories have so many things in common. You know, normal people doing basically drug deals with drug dealers that are south of the border, getting way in over their heads, trying to come up with new businesses that launder the money and all that. There's so many different things that Breaking Bad and Ozark could have in another universe where these stories have not completed. You know, they could have some interaction with each other. And I see, though, one bad thing about this thing, I think that if that did cross over, Walt would have ended up killing Jason Bateman and Laura Linney and just, you know, they would like, you can't be a part of this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So,
Ozark is, on my list of shame because I know it's, I have no question
you know
of its
what?
Quality, and I like everybody on it.
Yeah,
so.
Ozark is really good. I've enjoyed it. I just don't know if I would be like, you have to watch this. It's good. It's for sure good, and it's kept my interest enough to watch everything up until this last half, which I will see at some point. But it's mainly because of the actors involved in it that I would recommend it, because you have, if you've seen Breaking Bad, you have seen a lot of the things they have to do in this.
Yeah.
So, I see one on the side here, a comment saying Breaking Bad and The Wire. That would be pretty cool, actually. That would be a good crossover.
If there's somebody I know would take out Walt, it's Omar.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it just depends on which season of The Wire Walt shows up in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I have two. I would love to see Queen Latifah's Equalizer show up in the next Denzel Equalizer movie, and I've never even seen her show.
UNITY. Yeah, yeah.
I just like her, and I think it would be awesome, even if it was just a cameo, but especially if they, like, beat ass together.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that'd be awesome. Yeah, that would be sweet.
And then I also would enjoy seeing the rampant nihilism of Seinfeld crash into the ordered world of Frasier.
Oh, yes. Oh, my.
To a certain extent, you get a little bit of that with Cheers because Sam is so immoral. Mm-hmm. Many of those characters are without morals. But, like, Seinfeld is a whole nother level of, like, selfishness.
Yeah, yeah.
and I could just see Niles and Frasier sputtering at it and their dad just loving it. Other stuff in the comments... A Lion King and Ghost in the Darkness.
Yeah, well, there's also a Lion King and Kill Bill one. Yes, obviously, everybody can imagine that. Star Wars and Star Trek, sure. Although those, as someone had mentioned, they're completely different eras, I guess, even though Star Wars really, come on, they're really on it. That's in the future. You can say it's in the past if you want to. It says long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but whatever.
Nobody believes you.
Stranger Things and Gravity Falls. I've never seen Gravity Falls. I heard it's great, but I've never seen that. So
Office and Saw. You guys are in a spicy mood today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
As somebody who doesn't really like The Office, I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind seeing some of those characters go through.
You know what? It's funny. I think I saw every episode of The Office, but I could totally see why someone would hate The Office. Especially after, like, being on part of a Sins video for one of those, I was like, there's some things that are absolutely, like, just completely wrong in what they're, you know, in what they're doing here or whatever. It's don't have a way to articulate it, but it's just like, what the fuck is this show?
It's not something that bothers me, like, when I'm watching Friends reruns on TBS and they're over and American Dad comes on, I've told you this, I have to change the channel as fast as possible. Mm. American Dad is fingernails on a chalkboard.
Sure.
The Office is not that. When I'm on Comedy Central watching Seinfeld reruns, when they're done, The Office comes on. And I don't rush for the remote. But it just doesn't make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
We got time for at least one more, maybe. What is your favorite movie that everyone else seems to dislike? Oh, everybody's going to know my answers here.
Yeah, I think we've had this question in some form several times, and I've said stuff like Ocean's 12 in the past, but the movie, now I've found fans since. I think you and Jonathan are one, Patrick, who's in the chat, is one. Found fans of this movie over the years, but I remember when The Quick and the Dead came out, I was on an island about that movie. Like, I would, like, talk about The Quick and the Dead, and I heard one person I remember go, what, that Sharon Stone movie? Yeah, that's what I think of when I say The Quick and the Dead, that Sharon Stone movie. Even though Sharon Stone is very prominent, I wouldn't call it a Sharon Stone movie. And I'm like, did you even watch it? Like, The Quick and the Dead is awesome. And I actually even considered making it one of the big recommends. It may end up being one at some point. But that's a great, you know, fun Western. And it seemed like nobody watched it and nobody liked it. So,
yeah, interesting. I watched this movie on streaming a few years ago called The Signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's made in 2014. Lawrence Fishburne's in it. basically about, well, it's about a signal and some sci-fi stuff and possible super powers. The government people, scientists are chasing this guy. Anyway, I watched this movie and I was digging it hard. And I came out of it and I went, I wonder what the internet thinks of this movie. Not good.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes this movie. I have never gone back to it, but I will defend the fact that I really, really dug it. I could just say Horrible Bosses 2.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You guys all know that.
Yeah, that is a funny thing that you saw that one first, and now the first one, which has all the jokes from the second one. you're like, I don't like that first one as good. see down here The Weatherman, which is that's a good choice. I could have picked that one too. That one alone, just for the Nicolas Cage going down the sidewalk trying to get that item for his wife or whatever, he's trying to remember whatever that item was, and then he sees that woman who's that really hot woman in front of him, and he's like, I wish I had two dicks, and just in the middle is a stream of consciousness thing, and he's like talking about, like, you know, eggs or something, eggs, dozen eggs, I wish I had two dicks, you know. That's really funny.
Somebody likes Tokyo Drift.
I can see that.
Paul Blart, some brave people in the chat today.
I don't like Tokyo Drift, but I can see why people would like that.
If you like to drift.
yes, indeed.
In Tokyo.
Yes.
Let's go one more. All right. One more.
All right.
Since we are taking a 2-week break, we'll give them a bone. Here is a potentially interesting question. Well, we'll be the judge of that. What person or event do you believe should have a movie made about it or them?
So a documentary has been made about this, and it's a perfectly good documentary. I just think this is one of those kind of documentaries, since there isn't a lot of footage. Like, we always take to task a document, like something like Man on Wire coming out, and then they come out with a Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie later, and it's like, well, we've got footage of all the real shit that happened. Why do we need this dramatized at all?
Exactly.
But that, whatever that documentary was called, I think it's got a million names, a million words in the name, but it's an Island of Dr. Moreau, making like a story behind the Island of Dr. Moreau, really good documentary, but I would like to see a dramatization of the making of Island of Dr. Moreau, all the different crazy shit that happened, in that. And I think it would make a fantastic movie. But considering that David Thewlis has come out to say something to the effect that I'm never going to talk about anything that happened on that set, is makes me even more intrigued, but B, maybe we'll never get enough of the story to really know, to really hit and to make this a perfect movie. But I think that would be a great movie. If they did that right, all the little tension between Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer, the director getting fired and then like going off into the woods and coming back as an extra, all that type of stuff is, I have to see that on screen. I have to see that, since we don't have footage of it, I have to see it on screen. So I think it would be great.
I have so many answers here. This is a question you can make a whole podcast out of.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I thought of was that Robinson guy in Molly's Game, Jackie Robinson's brother who came in second. Who's the runner? Owens? Who's the Olympic runner?
Jesse Owens?
That she's talking about.
It's not.
Anyway, he broke the world record. Guy who came in second also broke the world record, but because he came in second, nobody ever remembers him. That guy's brother also happened to be Jackie Robinson. I think you could look at two of the biggest sport stories in all of history through the lens of this one guy who never got to have any of that glory.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a very interesting story to tell.
Yeah.
Similarly, I wrote any of the Midnight Ride guys from the Revolutionary era that got overshadowed by Paul Revere.
Yeah.
Because Paul Revere's the only guy anybody remembers, but there were like three or four different guys that made Midnight Rides that really kind of saved the bacon.
Mm-hmm.
History does this all the time. There was a woman who refused to give up her seat on a bus before Rosa Parks did. But she's not known by history as much as Rosa Parks is.
Right.
So somebody like that, somebody who history has straight up overshadowed, getting their chance to shine in a movie, I think that would be pretty awesome. Although, if I'm honest, a movie about riding a horse at night, not very exciting. Probably.
Well, it would be all the things leading up to that, right? It wouldn't wouldn't be just the horse riding, or else we'd have a 10-minute movie. So,
I would like to thank everybody for coming out to the live chat. I really like seeing your digital avatar faces every week. I also want to give a shout out to all the listeners. We really appreciate you. And if you have suggestions on small or big recommends, you can always send them to recotopia@cinemasins.com.
Okay, cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. This the next one is Top Secret. It'll be in a couple of weeks. But we'll see you next time. See ya.
Bye.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
That's not very loud. Why isn't it louder? Louder. Chowda. Say chowda.
The next shot is like he's peeking through some floorboards or something. It's like, it's not even, I don't even know what it is. And when they cut away to the long shot of the mayor, it's like, where is he? If he's up there, where is he looking down at the mayor, you know? But then he shows up inside and I'm like, okay, that doesn't explain how he got in at all.
I'm more concerned with why the skylight exists.
Yeah.
I'm like, is there a 30-foot pole somewhere in this guy's living room where he reaches up to crack the skylight open when he wants some air? It's also pouring rain right now.
Right.
That might be the first time in history I ever accidentally turned in a script early.
Like somewhere halfway between the time... it's supposed to happen. They're like, we've detected a change in your flight. And I was like, oh, it's at 6 o'clock now. Okay, whatever. I'll worry about it when I get there. Oh, it's there.
You should just change your lifestyle completely and fly like Adrian Grenier. Don't bring anything but the jeans and t-shirt you're wearing.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you can buy whatever the fuck you need when you get there if you're Adrian Grenier.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. So, yeah, they're going to be tough to beat no matter who comes out of the East. I mean, Rangers or Lightning. I mean, they're that Avalanche team is a handful, man. That's a team that could win 6 Stanley Cups if they keep it together.
Yeah, and they, you know, might have the ownership to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unlike a certain... local hockey
team.
Club.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is it weird to wish that your favorite sports team millionaire owner had more millions? Hey, we both made it back in time.
Yay.
Go us.
Mm-hmm. We should be praised for being able to get drinks and coming back in a minute.